I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, Texas Public Radio is the most trusted news source in San Antonio. That's according to an independent study of local news habits. The report was commissioned by the San Antonio Area Foundation and produced by Press Forward San Antonio, part of a national effort to support local journalism. Coming up, a pre-recorded discussion about that report and the health of local journalism. We're joined by Evan McKender of the News Revenue Hub, who authored that report, Ashley Alvarado, president and CEO of TPR, Angie Mock, publisher and CEO of the San Antonio Report, and Mark DeVosen, editor-in-chief and senior vice president of the San Antonio Express News. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
From the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. How healthy is the San Antonio local news environment? That answer depends on how you measure local news and what's being produced, who's being served, and are the local news providers sustainable? Last week at downtown UTSA's Buena Vista Auditorium, I moderated a discussion with the leaders of the major local newsrooms, the San Antonio Express News, the San Antonio Report, and Texas Public Radio. KSAT TV was also invited, but they were unable to attend. We discussed the challenges and opportunities to better serve the area communities. The bottom line, good work is being done, but there's lots of room for improvement. One area of focus is how to reflect San Antonio's unique identity in news and represent the diverse needs of our city and region. Here's that conversation. Today, we're talking about the future of local news in San Antonio. The San Antonio Area Foundation commissioned a report on the state of local news in the Alamo City and the surrounding area counties. It was done through Press Forward San Antonio, part of a $1 billion national effort to support local journalism. We're joined now by the man who compiled the report, Evan McKender. He is the Executive Vice President of Business Development at News Revenue Hub. Ashley Alvarado is the President and CEO of Texas Public Radio. Mark DeVosen, he is the Editor-in-Chief and Senior Vice President at the San Antonio Express News. Angie Mock is the President and CEO of the San Antonio Report. We've all seen the steady and significant decline of available, reliable, fact-based local journalism across the country and also here locally. It's connected to the growing threats that we've seen to democracy, increased polarization, and the spread of disinformation. Not having access to quality, dependable local news hurts a community in so many ways. Not being told about emergency developments, breaking news involves public safety, opportunities for improvements of public health, and also education opportunities, job opportunities. Having vital local news is vital to a community. I do want to thank Press Forward for coming forward and the San Antonio Area Foundation for presenting this opportunity to have this vital conversation. So first off, I want to talk to the person who compiled the report, Evan McKender. And Evan, tell us more about the report, News in the Heart of South Central Texas, a media landscape study for the San Antonio region.
Sure. What we really wanted to do was set out to build a supply and demand analysis for the ecosystem. So we, working with the foundation, we looked at 8 counties. We looked at Bexar and the surrounding 7 counties, and we really wanted to determine what the supply looks like. So what are most residents and community members across this region encountering in their day-to-day? What type of news? What do they want from news? And we also wanted to contrast that with the demand. So we wanted to look at community members across the region and ask them what are you looking for in your news? So we wanted to see this on the supply side, what the newsrooms were offering, and on the demand side, what citizens were looking for. And we did this in the form of a survey for the community members. And then we looked at, on the newsroom side, we did a content analysis of the 4 predominant newsrooms in the area, the ones that came out the most trusted and most popular, In our analysis, three of them are right here in the room, is San Antonio Report, TPR, and the Express News, as well as KSAT. And we sort of looked to figure out where the gaps are. And we really want to determine, you know, where are the gaps between what residents want and where are the gaps between, you know, what the region is offering.
And to get to this discussion about, like, local news, why ask the question about local news? Why do we need to find out about these gaps? Don't they present themselves?
Sure. Let's put it in broader national context, right? I mean, you mentioned at the top that there have been real headwinds in the crossis industry really now going on for about a generation. The news business has been losing ground for 25 years, if not longer. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has a stat that I like to cite quite a bit. I mean, I don't have pleasure in citing this stat, but it exists that 70% of the newspaper jobs between 2006 and 2021 have disappeared. And that trend has only really accelerated in the last few years that we've seen since the pandemic. So really, there's a national context happening here. And you know, a lot of that is for various factors. There's the shifting way that people consume news, of course, the move to the internet. There's social platforms have been quite disruptive in changing reader habits as well. And then, you know, there are major tech companies, Google, Facebook, that came in and heavily disrupted the advertising market, 20 years ago. And that's a lot of the, you know, money that newsrooms used in addition to subscriptions to make payroll, and a lot of that has just disappeared. So a lot of the funding has just really disappeared across the industry. And it's the same we found in our research here in San Antonio. What we found in surveying the newsrooms themselves is, a lot of newsrooms, they're not growing. There have been layoffs in recent years. We found and mapped about 39 different newsrooms across the entire ecosystem. So that's across all eight counties, which seems like a really robust number. But when you look behind the curtain and ask them, you know, you find that their revenue is a struggle, and they are really, really eager to reach audiences as best they can, but their resources are a real gap for them as well. So you're seeing trends that are happening on both the national level and in a regional system like San Antonio. And the last thing I want to add is, you know, this is contrasted to the extraordinary growth. Really, the story of this region is one of explosive growth over basically that same period. We have a graphic in the report that shows, you know, counties like Comal and Guadalupe growing. You know, Comal has grown 60% over the last 15 years. And so really what you're seeing is, as these resources dwindle, the newsrooms really are struggling to keep up with the population growth across the region, and that gap is getting wider.
So there's this major paradox that we're dealing with about the consumption of news. There's more opportunities to consume news. It's easier to get news. People are probably reading more news or receiving news than ever before, because it's on their phones, it's on their computers, it's wherever you go. We got 24-hour opportunities to get news. Yet there's fewer stories, less content. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, we found in the report that media habits among community members really do match those nationwide, and I don't think this will surprise anybody in the audience, that folks are getting their news more and more on networks like Facebook. Facebook in particular was a really popular one. And if you live out in more of the rural areas, local Facebook groups specifically are a really popular medium to get news. And, you know, we can't quite capture in a survey what news really means in those contexts. I mean, obviously we know that there's a lot of misinformation happening on those social networks. The social networks themselves are deprioritizing news in their algorithms, so they're actually not showing a lot of content, especially related to politics, that might be about the upcoming mayoral election, for example. And that's just because of the way that Facebook controls the algorithm and plays with the algorithm. And it creates a conundrum for newsrooms, too, because to reach all these folks that are moving onto social networks, where while the social networks themselves are deprioritizing news, it creates a gap for folks to be able to really find the content that some of the folks on the stage here are producing that could keep them more informed.
We're taking a break, but we'll be right back with our conversation about local news.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. This is a pre-recorded panel discussion about local news. The San Antonio Area Foundation and Press Forward San Antonio produced the report News in the Heart of South Central Texas, a media landscape study for the San Antonio region. The author of the study is Evan McKinder, Executive Vice President of Business Development at the News Revenue Hub.
And we actually found that in our survey, while I think around 60% of residents said they are getting their news over Facebook, many of those same residents said that they don't want to get their news on Facebook. That's not the place where they actually want to find.
In your report, you list things that people want, news stories that they want to cover, they want to, they were going to read about. And I thought it was interesting. One of the ones that was least interested in people was energy. And I'm thinking, I remember during the when the grid was about to fail, and you know, we were in the dark. I mean, that's when they really cared. They wanted energy stories. They wanted to know about what's happening with the grid and when's one of my lights coming on. So does that list, like what people care about, what kind of news stories we need to be covering, particularly local news, that's...
Very much so, yeah. It ebbs and flows. And, you know, we did our survey before the election also. So immigration actually came up as a topic that folks weren't as interested in hearing updates about, but it did come up as a topic as something that worried people and that they were interested in hearing in that context. But yes, these subjects ebb and flow. You know, you have a mayoral election happening right now. If you were to poll people, you'd probably get a bit of a different response on what type of content they want to read. But there was a consistent response around, you know, wanting more coverage around political accountability specifically, less around crime, you know, day-to-day crime stories, and more about the accountability and the systems behind some of that work. And education was another big topic that folks want. There's one quote that always stood out to me in the report, which is, I feel like I'm more inclined to hear about a train wreck in Nebraska than I am to hear about what's going on at the local education level at this point.
And to the point about immigration, I mean, if you were to look at the political ads that were running in November, you would have thought that immigration was the number one issue that people were interested in. But I saw that listed as, you know, one of the least issues, and it might be because of the way that we cover immigration. It is really tough because they seem kind of repetitive, and like you talk a lot about single source reporting. It's hard to get good sourcing on immigration and being able to tell the stories. It's the investments to get good story, I think, that would grab listeners, readers. It's tough. I see that list, and people don't care about these stories. I think they do care about these stories, but that's a challenge that we need to help them care about those stories more.
Right. I think that there's a paradigm in the survey that we took that's based on a UK survey paradigm where we ask folks to basically talk about their user needs. So judge how the news, the local news that's reaching them is, quote unquote, updating them, you know, just keeping them updated and understanding what the news story is, but also engaging them and helping them. And there's a big difference, I think, between a story that offers an update, you know, ICE was in this area recently, versus a story that, you know, feels helpful to the community that might be concerned about the ICE raids, right? Might be thinking about, you know, here's what do I need to do if ICE shows up at my school? Or what do I need to do if ICE shows up at a restaurant? There's a difference between covering that event happened versus, you know, how to help communities that might have questions around raids like that.
So let me broaden things out a bit. I want to hear from our other guest about the commitment to covering local news and how they see local news as part of their business model and community service model. And hopefully those things are very closely aligned. Let me start off with Mark with Express News.
Thank you, David. So the Express News, San Antonio Express News, is really a local newspaper. That is where all of our resources are applied toward covering local news. And our job is to make local news interesting and to marshal a sustaining audience for our organization. I mean, that's really what it's all about. That the mission we're on and that I believe in very passionately is ensuring the survival of independently reported, revenue-supported news, because, to paraphrase Winston Churchill, it's the worst model except for all the other models. And what's great about it is that it ensures a very high degree of editorial independence. That is a very difficult, elusive thing to preserve. And in my lot of years doing journalism, it is the strongest way to protect editorial independence is through a revenue-supported model. We are moving more and more aggressively toward a reader-supported model. So the proportion of a newspaper budget that is advertising supported, you know, the big department store ad adjacent to the article, has declined significantly over the last 10, 20 years. And what we call customer revenue, which is subscribers either to receive the paper in print or to be able to access our website, has increased very significantly as a proportion. So we now, we're a privately held company, I'm not gonna give away secrets, but millions of dollars a year from people who pay to subscribe and have a digital-only subscription. So we're moving toward, it behooves us to maintain and to build a paying audience who find the news that we report to be valuable and worthwhile, that they will pay for it. And it is entirely local news. It's not everywhere. There are gaps. We can't be in all places any more than any other news organization can be. But I think we're having a lot of success in shifting our operation toward a reader-supported base and identifying what people want to read that overlaps with our judgment of what we think is important and where we have expertise. So we're looking every day for that sweet spot. And just to give one example, it might be our venerable military affairs reporter, who I think you know, David C. Christensen, is one of our most read writers, because particularly at this time in the life of the politics of the country, he's writing about the military, he's writing about DEI in the military and deployments at the border. He has enormous knowledge and expertise. He has a source network he can reach out to. He can use information about the discussion in the online world to help him understand what people really want to know about. And when that meets up with his expertise and his sourcing, you get very good stories, and they've been very avidly read and read in large numbers over the last couple of months.
Ashley, how is local content, how does that fit into the model at Texas Public Radio?
I mean, it's absolutely key to the model. And one of the things, you know, part of what I love when it comes to any kind of landscape analysis, like what News Revenue have produced for the San Antonio Area Foundation, is that opportunity to look at how we're doing against how we might think we're doing. And to have during that period of time, you know, a report of what percentage of our content on our homepage is about San Antonio. And for us, it was really small that week. And to make sure that we go back in and we say, let's look at how we're serving up San Antonio to folks in San Antonio. How are we looking at South Central Texas for South Central Texas? I do want to back up a minute and say, you know, I came into this role just over 4 months ago with a lot of energy around how we can best understand the information needs and habits of community members. But when we're talking about the present, you know, the present circumstances of local media, and we're talking about the future of local media, a lot of work is happening right now that is taking people outside of their day jobs to look at how we're safeguarding journalism. And so for us, we're having these conversations about how we get more local, how we get more consistent, and how do we protect funding for public media? How do we understand changing regulatory guidelines? How are we having conversations about what can and cannot be in our website or in our email signatures? And so right now, as we're doing all of this, regardless of the platform or the revenue model, we have a lot of considerations on top of the things that we're most passionate about doing.
I mean, I remember when I started at TPR, starting the program Texas Matters 25 years ago, and there was no other local content on our airwaves at that time. Actually, the thinking was that our job at the local NPR station was basically just to be the faucet where NPR came out of for the local audience, because this was pre-internet. And the idea that our listeners wanted local content was really just crazy talk. And now here we are as according to the report, top trusted and a place where people go to get local news. I mean, that is a metamorphosis. Any thoughts about how, well, you weren't here for that, but you probably know the narrative overall.
I mean, I think, you know, when we talk about broadcast, it's about reaching a broad audience. And so you were serving up what you could for the broadest range of folks. But what worked as a national business model for radio or for other broadcasters is very different from the behaviors that you have on different platforms. And so one of the statistics, in the same way it's a statistic that doesn't make you happy, but I also love to share, is that notion that in radio, for many, many stations, the typical journey from discovery to financial support is 8 years. However, if you're looking at some of the digital ways that people consume journalism, the biggest opportunity for a newsletter subscriber, for example, to become a paying subscriber of that organization is the first 100 days. And so you have to understand that whether you're talking about revenue opportunities or you're talking about best serving an audience across different platforms, the needs and opportunities are different. And what gets so hard is that we're trying to do not one, not two, not three, but like 7 or 8 of them at a time, and also fighting for our existence.
Angie Mock at the San Antonio Report. I mean, obviously, local news is important to your entire identity, your business model, but talk about how you got there and how that's working.
Sure. Yes, we were founded 13 years ago as a strictly local news outlet, all digital. And it is a truly, their report said that we produce 87% of our news is local, and we're trying to figure out what that one story might have been during that period of time that wasn't local, because we truly are 100% local across all our beats. We'll occasionally, you know, tell some state stories, but with the local, a local bent to what it means locally. So, you know, at the time we were founded, our founder likes to say it was going to be a for-profit, but it ended up being a no-profit. So a couple years into it, we became a nonprofit news organization. And at the time, there were probably 30-ish nonprofit news organizations of that type in the country, and now I believe we're pushing 500. So the nonprofit model has just grown explosively across the country, and it does work for us as an independent local newsroom. We everything we do is going to be local. Our right now, this moment in the news cycle, there's a seemingly insatiable appetite for government and politics coverage with the elections coming on. And so how our approach to that is not just what you're going to read every day when you get our newsletter or go to our site. It's really augmented by being in the community with, as an extension, we call it live journalism. And so we're constantly in the community going deeper, especially when it comes to government and politics. We've had a number of debates. In fact, another one tonight, Council District 8 and 9. But yeah, that's our take on it is, it's not just publishing the local news, it's being in the community with that and engaging at a deeper level.
Evan, let me ask you about, how do you define local news? Regional-wide, statewide? Is a statewide story, if I take a story about the measles outbreak, is that considered a local story?
So for the purposes of the study, local really means it was, you know, produced in San Antonio, and it's about the San Antonio region specifically. So it is about the 8 counties that we were looking at. We ended up looking at, I think, around close to 600 stories. We looked at homepage, we looked at some broadcast, and categorize them accordingly through some coding, and that's how we ended up doing the analysis. But you know, it's interesting. Ashley and I were talking before. She's been telling us how there's a real appetite among the audience for statewide stories too. And you know, there's no moral valence to local news versus a statewide story or anything like that.
I'll go down and I'll report on the border. I'll go to Corpus Christi and report on issues that they're having there. I mean, also reporting on statewide measles outbreak stories.
Yep, Texas seems to really like news about Texas in a way that Californians might not. For the purposes of the study, we were trying to really figure out what reporting is going on in San Antonio about San Antonio.
Taking a break from our discussion about the future of local news in our region, this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio and the surrounding region is a news-rich environment. There's always something happening that the public needs to know about, wants to know about. There's crime and public safety, but what's behind those crime stats? There are elections, but who are those candidates and what's their history of public service? Education, the local economy, jobs, transportation. Did my team win last night and will my garbage get picked up this morning? How can local newsrooms serve you better while they're being faced with shrinking budgets? We had a conversation about that. Evan McKinder of the News Revenue Hub authored a report about San Antonio local news. Ashley Alvarado is the president and CEO of TPR. Angie Mock is the publisher and CEO of the San Antonio Report. And Mark DeVosen is the editor-in-chief and senior vice president of the San Antonio Express News.
Sports, that's considered local with high school football, football, that would be local, and the Spurs and UTSA Roadrunners.
Yeah, we also categorized stories based on topic and looked at, original reporting, sources, all of those things. So I believe sports would probably come into play because they are local stories.
Sports, let's talk to Mark about sports. While sports, I'm not a sports guy, but I recognize the importance of sports, particularly when it comes to the minting of local identity. Find that a lot in the Express News. How do you go about at the Express trying to capture and reflect local identity, making sure that people feel seen and that they are in the paper, in sports and also local news?
David, I love that you refer to the newspaper as the Express, which is what it was until, I think, 1992 when it merged with the News. I get letters from people who are the third generation in their family to subscribe to the Express News, and they'll sometimes address me as the editor of the Express. That's how they remember it. It's just interesting that the roots of the paper go back to 1865, I think. To answer your question, one of the primary ways that local sports is local is high school sports. That's a huge deal. We have two full-time reporters and an editor dedicated to high school sports coverage. Football, most rewardingly football, but also volleyball, basketball, baseball, girls and boys. And not to get too technical, but those stories convert, is the phrase, turn a reader into a paying subscriber at a very high rate. It's not the top line, the overall volume of readership for that content is not the highest, but the conversion rate is very high. So clearly, the way that we cover it, with one of the longest serving of those prep writers is a name you might recognize, David Hinojosa, who's been doing it for his whole adult life for 30 or 40 years. He's known to the coaches, he's known to the families. People surround him when he goes to games. It's the whole, like when you probably get surrounded in the shopping mall, David. So there is a real connection there because it involves children and it involves traditions in these high schools. In San Antonio, everyone introduces themselves by the high school they attended. The Spurs is it's a homegrown institution, but it's also part of a global business enterprise, the NBA. And it is harder to make a dent, if you will, in the readership for the Spurs because there's a super abundance of sources to get basketball scores and basketball information, including the league itself, which is a publisher. They employ journalists and they publish game summaries and so forth. So we have a great columnist named Mike Finger who attempts to draw out the story behind the game and personalities and Wembanyama's self-education attempts, all the books he reads, and his relationship with Coach Popovich, et cetera. But that is more of a challenge. And we try to get at the nature of the relationship between the city and the Spurs, families who've had, you know, multi-generational attachments, murals that were painted long ago and who painted them, and the type of devotion that they inspire. So it's a pair. The Spurs are both global and they're local. And we try to report on the franchise itself, the business of the franchise, because it is it's an interesting big business. And one of the most interesting aspects of that story is that over the last couple of years, what was a tightly held family enterprise had to recapitalize by bringing in tech billionaires from California, you know, Joe Gebbia, Michael Dell. And in some sense, the center of gravity, I bet the board meetings of the Spurs are much different than they were 10, 20 years ago when it was all locals. Now you've got these heavyweights who are out-of-state money, and they're based in Austin. And it does feed into that anxiety that, well, maybe that's where the team is going to go someday, although the whole family says no. So, yeah, sports is absolutely a source of identity and of belonging.
I hear the Spurs are looking for a new place to play basketball, you know, maybe downtown somewhere. I don't, you know, that might be a story. We should look into that. You know, it's probably one of the biggest stories that we're dealing with. You know, it's a sports story, it's a tax story, it's a local government story, it's a gentrification story, everything there is that's going to directly, be a huge, huge story. So, Angie, how would y'all cover something? How are y'all covering that?
So we, our sports, well, first off, I'm envious of that conversion rate you get from your high school sports coverage. But, and if you had, like, you have no idea how many times I've had a donor call me and say, you just need to cover high school sports. Like, no, we don't, because somebody else does that already really well. So we don't need to do that. So what we tell is more of the stories around sport, mostly through freelance writers that write for us. But increasingly, obviously, we're covering the story around Project Marvel. And in fact, we had Lindsay Carnett had a great piece out on Sunday where we did a complete look back to 2003, when at the time the SBC Center came to be, and how it came to be, what the deep reporting on what the surveys were that led it to happen on the East Side, what was promised to the East Side, what was not promised to the East Side, and how it all transpired. So more around the community of impact of sporting and Project Marvel is how we look at that, and the business of sport, but not, we don't cover actually sporting events.
But I want to get to the point about identity. How do you see what San Antonio Report does to reflect the identity of San Antonio back to San Antonio?
So one of the long-running series we have every Saturday morning is called Where I Live, and that's contributed work from people in San Antonio who write a piece about their neighborhood and why they chose that neighborhood and what it's like to live in that neighborhood. And so that's a huge piece of our identity. We have all those stories up on a map where, you know, a lot of people, a lot of realtors tell us, a lot of community people tell us when they're contemplating a move, they go to that to see and learn about neighborhoods. A new piece of coverage that we have that we're really excited about, and it really speaks to your point about identity. San Antonians really identify themselves around food and the importance of food and the culture of food in this community. So we just added Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Ken Rodriguez to join us on our, we have a sub brand called Live Like a Local, where we publish content about things to do locally. And Ken is now covering the unique culinary scene in San Antonio. And we're seeing right out of the gate lots of...
And so you see this as something that's going to help you in your sustainability. People will say, oh, you're writing about my neighborhood. This is about me. This is my neighborhood Mexican restaurant. Therefore, I feel that bond that I will become a sustaining member.
Absolutely. Just like sports is a big gateway. Our Live Like a Local content is a big gateway for people coming into our site and becoming newsletter subscribers and ultimately paying members.
Ashley, how does Texas Public Radio see identity, reflecting the identity of our listeners, showing them that we are from here, Texas Public Radio? This is local content throughout the day, even though, you know, we're carrying Terry Gross and all these other programs.
So I think the first thing is making sure that we are, through the makeup of our staff, that we are, through the story selection and what folks hear and read, an accurate reflection of the community itself. And so that means that you are getting to the moments of joy. It means that you're getting to the things that really feel like they are of San Antonio. And I'll say, you know, I grew up, I was talking to somebody earlier today, I was never anybody's target audience. And I think that but I was always obsessed with journalism. And that's something that has stuck with me in every part of my career, to say, how do we make sure that people feel included and welcomed in what we're doing? And so for so long, there were whole communities of journalism, with a capital J, ignored. And then they wrote stories about them. And then they wrote stories maybe for them. As you started getting into the work of engaged journalism, you would start to hear about reporting with. And I think when any one of our outlets is at our best, we are doing journalism that is of community. And so it's those moments when, you know, one of the things that I hear everywhere is, oh, you're at TPR, I love Joey Palacios. And it's that moment where there's somebody who is just, they are San Antonio, you are San Antonio. And so finding all the different indicators that we are of. And sometimes it's our story selection, sometimes it's our word choice. You know, I've talked a lot about the national coverage, and this is a long time ago, but when Jenny Rivera died, every report said Mexican-American singer, Jenny Rivera has died. And it was that moment of saying, we're giving this ethnic identifier because we find it extraordinary. But you don't give somebody, you know, when Betty White died, nobody told anybody what her heritage was. It was this moment of signaling, this is not our audience. And so, again, it can be a word selection. It can be the stories that are about Fiesta. It can be the stories that are just truly San Antonio. And I will tell you, as somebody who is onboarding into San Antonio, there is a lot that is uniquely San Antonio. I had to Google holidays to understand why I had the day off, but I'm so thrilled to get to learn about that and to have TPR and other local news outlets here to be part of that discovery journey for me.
Time for a quick break from our discussion about the future of local news in San Antonio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, back in 1 minute. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Let's get back to our discussion about the future of our local news. Evan McKinder of the News Revenue Hub authored a report with the San Antonio Area Foundation and Press Forward San Antonio about the condition of San Antonio local news.
Evan, I want to get to you about, you know, what are your thoughts about identity? How does reflecting identity of your community in your product, how does that create a sustainable future for these products?
Oh, well, I mean, the publishers have said it very eloquently and beautifully here. I mean, you know, in our day-to-day work, the News Revenue Hub, what we do is we help newsrooms build audiences and build relationships with audiences. And then further downstream, we help them try and convert readers into paying members. A lot of our newsrooms are running membership programs. And what we found in our research is it's not really the size of the audience that drives membership. It's really how loyal your audience is and how much of a relationship you have with your audience. You know, we were talking before the show about how intimate an audio setting is, and, you know, that type of engagement is really powerful, I think, for Texas Public Radio specifically. But for other newsrooms, it's, you know, it's Live Like a Local content. It's the food content. It's the sports content. It's, you know, it's making sure that you understand that you're listening to your audience and hearing what they want more of. In our report, they, you know, folks talked a lot about education, and they talked a lot about accountability, and, you know, pulling back the curtain behind crime and telling us more about the systemic issues behind that and what council might be doing to try and resolve some of these crimes rather than just, you know, individual incidents. So it's really understanding what your audience wants, and it's very specific to your publication. And, you know, if you can really create that that engine of loyalty, then, you know, you can really build relationships with readers and get membership downstream.
This interesting statistic about people who do not consume local news regularly mentioned several reasons, and there is this one thing: many believe that the important news will find them. So I guess they'll see it in their Twitter feed, they'll see it in their scrolling as they go through all the other things. I mean, how does that? So, and this is always the debate. Always, we're trying to figure out how do we use social media in order to. You know, are we trying to promote news? Are we trying to inform? What are we doing here with the social media? What is the key?
Social media is a complex topic for news organizations. I think all the publishers up here would echo that. You know, I think as younger generations specifically turn to social media to get their news. The industry, you know, the industry with technology has always had trouble staying on the heartbeat of the change of the pace of technology, because it's expensive to keep up with these things, and, you know, the industry falters as well. But it is really, really essential, and I think right now the industry is at this moment, and you know, we should ask the newsrooms here, you know, how can you keep up with some of this, particularly some of the content that's coming through TikTok, Instagram? You know, video is very expensive to produce well. There's a lot of discerning consumers out there that are on those networks and looking for their news, but they're also not going to read, you know, consume something that's not well produced, right? And it's pretty complicated. You know, TPR, and I'm sure knows this quite well, about how expensive it can be to produce really quality audio and to make someone like me sound good. So producing that type of work really takes resources, and the resource gap is widening for a lot of newsrooms. So there, you know, a lot of newsrooms are in this position right now where they're thinking, well, we need to build new audiences, and we need to reach younger audiences, but it's very difficult for us to invest in something like, you know, a videographer or something like that. So it's, you know, it's another gap that we found in the survey.
And Mark, I've seen that Express News, I see, you know, San Antonio News in a Minute videos that are produced, you know, podcasts that are produced. You know, I mean, is it, do you feel like it's unfair to talk about the paper as being the paper? And how do y'all see what you deliver?
It's about, you have to reach people on a variety of different platforms and channels where the readers are. It's not that different than what any business that is customer facing is doing. Trying to find you every which way that they can. So we have a vodcast, we call a vodcast studio. We produce podcasts that are also videotaped. And we will slice those up and distribute the best parts in social media bits. And we will post them on our website. We have a YouTube channel where we post them also. We generate videos for TikTok and Instagram. We have social media editors who find ways to represent our journalism on Facebook and Blue Sky and so forth. Now, what does that do for us? As was said earlier, a lot of the platforms are adjusting their algorithms to de-emphasize news because they don't want people to leave their walled garden. They want them to stay there. They don't want them to follow a link to another site. But what we have found, the reason to do it, is that it's informational for people, number one. Number two, it does deepen the connection to the brand. People are more aware of the San Antonio Express News than they would otherwise be if they find it in these other places. And to some extent, it does motivate them to go find the site and go read it and see what it's about. Advertisers are very driven by something called, I hope I have the right phrase, market penetration or market awareness, but there are companies like Scarborough that will measure for advertisers a particular brand, Express News or KSAT or whatever, USAA, how deep is the public, is consumer awareness of that brand? And the Express News in the last number of years has become much rated much more highly by that measure. Many, many more consumers in this metro are aware of our brands because of all the ways that we now push material out to people, and the fact that we have multiple products. We have a free website, mysa.com. We have a subscriber website, expressnews.com. We have a seven-day-a-week print newspaper. We own San Antonio Magazine, which we bought a year or two ago. So you have to play a lot of different cards to stay in the game, I guess is the answer.
But Ashley, TPR is investing in doing Spanish language news translations and also original stories in Spanish. We've seen traffic for these stories doing really well. So how is that, you know, part of the TPR mission and also providing local news? And I'm wondering about, like, I mean, is it because there's a hunger for Spanish language news and TPR is basically the only one out there or one of the few out there trying to provide that?
I mean, I think this is a really good opportunity to talk about the opportunities that come with philanthropy and that come with mission-driven organizations, whether you're talking about a for-profit or a nonprofit. Traditionally, public radio stations are not where you go for Spanish language content. And so the first thing to note is that TPR has a history of doing this. It's not this one story where you go, oh, I bet Spanish speakers would love to know about this. And then you're like, but nobody came to the site. There's no audience for that. Instead, it's saying we're committed to doing this and we are doing it as a service to community, to NPR, so that more NPR stories can become available to more audiences. And we're thinking all the way through distribution. And so we've been working and we're kicking off a relationship with Univision stations in Texas and with other partner stations in the Texas newsroom to make sure that really quality reporting and digital content is getting to Univision consumers, both potentially on air, but then definitely online too. And so I think, you know, when you look at, you know, with TPR, it started through a philanthropic investment and being able to do that. But more generally, when you're in the nonprofit space and you have relationships with funders who are willing to go along with you on the innovation journey, then you can find those ways. You know, I was really struck by your calling out of the point of people waiting for news to get to them. Because in different research projects that I've done in the past, you know, there was this one time I recruited a neighbor to participate in some research, and so I was observing, but I wasn't the researcher. And the person says, when you're trying to understand what's going on in the world, what do you do? And the neighbor turned to him and said, well, normally I text Ashley. And Ashley will tell me what's happening. And so I think about that moment a lot because people's, you know, trusted sources, people's journey to information is going to change. It's going to be fairly individualized.
Personal context.
And so thinking about how can we find ways within our news organization,
particularly when there's so much trust is an issue.
To find ways to replicate that trust, meaning or the sense of the relationship that allows for that trust. And so sometimes it's really going to, well, what are the trusted institutions? I learned a lot with research, and this is what this research is about actually. In Southern California, when I was with LAist, we were trying to understand how to raise awareness about the stakes of the census. And person after person, you know, for folks who remember the NPR coverage, every day you would hear Hansi Luong talking about the court cases around the quote-unquote citizenship question. And that was really what the majority of people knew about the census. They didn't know what it connected to as far as resources available. They didn't know why it mattered. And so in that moment, one of the things that stuck with me from the conversation was this understanding of the term trusted messengers. And when you're in a position, because of philanthropic support, because of diversified revenue streams, to not always have to have a revenue outcome for every single thing you do, then you can go, well, you know what? For these specific communities, and it can be for whatever reason, I'm not the trusted messenger. We are not the trusted messenger. But, you know, do what you do best and partner on the rest. So look at, maybe we're going to work with local libraries. Maybe we're going to work with local school districts. Maybe we're going to work, you know, to be at the state fair, whatever, to become that available to others. And it might start as actually the news finding you, but you're going to build that relationship where they seek you out too.
You've been listening to a vital conversation about local news. How can we do a better job of serving the community while also finding ways to maintain our newsrooms? We heard from Evan McKinder of the News Revenue Hub, who authored the report on San Antonio local news, Ashley Alvarado, president and CEO of TPR, Angie Mock, president and CEO of the San Antonio Report, and Mark DeVosen, editor-in-chief and senior vice president of the San Antonio Express News. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.